So one thing that is a real useful tool that is not too old is the use of safekeeping agreements before you qualify. Safekeeping agreements have been around for a while, and they're a tool to say that if awards assets are kept with a financial institution, and that financial institution reaches an agreement with the guardian and the court to not release those to the guardian, then the guardian doesn't need to be bonded on that because he can't steal that money. But in the past, it used to be that we'd still have to get the big bond and then go in and create the safekeeping agreement. Well, now we can actually, after the order has been signed by the court appointing the guardian, then the guardian can enter into that safekeeping agreement before he gets his letters and say that we've now put these assets into safekeeping agreement, it's been approved, and now the court can do a lesser bond. So it's a good way to reduce the bond when necessary. So keep that in mind if you're facing a really huge bond down the road. So now let's talk about the actual powers. Excuse me for this frog. Let's talk about the actual powers and duties of the guardian. And first, we'll talk about the guardian of the person. The duties of the guardian of the person are laid out in statute. There's not a whole lot that are laid out in the actual statute, but it's more of a common sense approach as to what needs to happen. The specific rights that are given to any ward are covered in the Bill of Rights for the ward, so always be familiar with that. But it's a common sense approach to where the guardian of the person is going to be in charge of, by statute, physical possession of the ward and the right to establish the ward's legal domicile and the powers to consent to medical, psychiatric, and surgical treatment for the ward. So it's basically the same sort of thing that a parent would be able to do for a child when it comes to issues of residence and health. There are a few special provisions to always keep in mind when you're a guardian. One is that you have to give certain notices if things are going to be changing for the ward. Because you've got a statutory duty to at least tell the court if the ward's residence is going to change or they're going to be moving to more restrictive care other than when it's on an emergency. And also, there are certain notice provisions that have to be given out to family members if they have requested to get that notice about changes that may happen to the ward's care and where the ward might be. One thing, too, that comes up a lot, especially for wards who are mentally ill, is, well, how can we help them deal with this mental illness? How do I get them the psychoactive medications that they really need in order to get better? Because we know that's what they need to get better. Well, in Texas and in most states, you cannot, even just as a guardian, force the ward to take psychoactive medications. And that's why quite often the guardianship of the person is not a good remedy for somebody who has a mental illness. Sometimes it's good to have because it at least gives you information about the hospitalization, but it still can't get to that point where the guardian has the ability to have the ward take medications. So. And they also cannot be transported, or they cannot be admitted to a mental health hospital for treatment. They can be transported there by the guardian, and which may facilitate the actual admission of the ward into the procedure. And also, and actually one thing I was saying that is incorrect is that I was saying that you cannot consent to psychoactive medications. You actually can consent to psychoactive medications when somebody is in the hospital. So, for example, if somebody is taken to a mental health hospital and determined to be a danger to themselves or to others, but they're refusing medication, then the guardian can consent to those medications while they're in the hospital. So, but the guardian does not have the ability to force those medications onto the ward. So it's a little bit, maybe you wanted to make that distinction. Similarly, a guardian can consent to electroconvulsive treatment if a ward is in a mental health facility. And which sometimes that is a really good tool for people, especially in really deep depression where nothing else works. So there's limited things that a guardian of the person can do for mentally ill wards. So just always keep that in mind that it's not an easy solution. So I know that I spend a lot of time when parents will call and say that we've got this issue or a child's having a psychotic break. I think I need to have a guardianship. And we have to explain that it's not really going to get you where you need to get, and it may end up damaging a lot of relationships along the way. So now let's talk about the general duties of the guardian of the estate, which there's a lot more in the estate's code that deals with that because you need to have more rules, usually when you're talking about exactly how the property of the ward is going to be used. So But the basic rule that's in the estates code is that a guardian needs to manage the estate in the same way that a prudent person would manage his own property. So it's a prudent person standard. And that's why part of the reason why the bond is there, so that if somebody does not make prudent decisions and they make really stupid decisions without asking for court approval and the ward loses a lot of money, then at least this way there's the bond to ensure that that the ward is made whole for the guardian not being a prudent person. So that's kind of the big overview of what the guardian needs to be doing. So, which is usually not a problem because we've always told the guardian, don't make bad decisions and always contact us before you make any questionable decisions. So now let's talk about one of the first requirements that the guardian actually has to do by statute, and that is to get out certain notices. So much like the estates code, you have to give out a notice, a general notice to creditors. It needs to be published in a newspaper. We finally changed the statute to where it says that it needs to be published in a newspaper of general circulation in the county where the letters were issued instead of one printed in the county. So you got to get that out there, though. And that's the sort of standard notice that says that if you've got any claims against the guardianship, bring them to the guardian or the guardian's attorney. So that has to be done. And then you have to file proof that that's been done with the court, much like you have to in any decedent's estate. Also similar to a decedent state is that you have to give a notice to secured creditors. And so that notice to secured creditors is supposed to go out within 4 months after the letters are issued and be done by certified mail, return receipt requested. And you got to file that notice with the court. And the other thing that's a little different from the estate is that you also have the responsibility to file